bibliophiles, now is the time to share your favorite summer reads with us. And while you're at it, give a shout out to your favorite independent bookstore and local library branch. The weather is perfect for a day at the beach or in the park with a great book. So what's on your list and how are you consuming literature these days? Also, what is the state of the independent bookstore in the digital age? A number of venues in the Bay are in danger of closure. So are you supporting the local literary infrastructure? How are local libraries innovating to serve their neighborhoods? It's your call with me, Holly Kernan, and you after this news.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. Hundreds of thousands of demonstrators in the Egyptian capital Cairo are awaiting a statement from the military after a 48-hour deadline for a resolution to the country's political crisis passed. President Mohamed Morsi said a coalition government should be part of a solution and again insisted he would stay on as president. But one of his advisers has described the day's events as a military coup. Rana Jawad is in Cairo.
This is a nation with the people in limbo, breathlessly waiting to see and hear what the army will say and do. The 48-hour deadline issued by the military and the time for a promised announcement of a new plan has passed. In a statement earlier today, they said they were meeting with representatives from different political factions, religious institutions, and the youth. But the outcome of these conversations is unknown. Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of opponents and supporters of President Morsi are on the streets. Cairo is awash with rumours about the president's future.
A court in Turkey has cancelled the controversial redevelopment of Taksim Square in central Istanbul, which had triggered a nationwide wave of anti-government protests. The court upheld an earlier ruling that the plans to reshape the square violated preservation rules. James Reynolds reports.
The court's ruling marks a victory for environmental campaigners. They made opposition to the development of Gezi Park the symbol of widespread anti-government protests in early June. Thousands of demonstrators camped out in the park for more than 2 weeks before they were evicted by the police. Police officers posted on the edge of the park now stop anyone from getting back in.
Police in South Africa have forced their way into the homestead of Nelson Mandela's grandson, Mandela, to make him comply with a court order in a family dispute over burial sites. A sheriff used a pickaxe to break open the gates. Officers are searching for the remains of three of Nelson Mandela's children so they can return them to their original graves. Mandela's lawyers have appealed against the ruling. The Belgian King Albert II has announced he will abdicate later this month. Speaking on national television, the 79-year-old said his health was no longer good enough to fulfil his duties the way he would like and that it was time to pass the torch to the next generation.
Het is dus met sereniteit en vol vertrouwen.
It is with serenity and full of confidence that I announce my intention to step down on July the 21st, 2013, our national holiday, in favour of the heir apparent, my son, Philippe.
King Albert has had a 20-year reign, increasingly focused on trying to maintain the unity of a nation torn between its French and Flemish-speaking parts. World News from the BBC. The president of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, has called for an urgent meeting of the UNASUR group of South American nations after European countries denied transit through their airspace to a plane carrying the Bolivian president. The incident left President Evo Morales grounded in Austria, where his plane was searched on suspicion that it might be carrying the fugitive intelligence analyst Edward Snowden. The Indian government has approved a major new welfare program to provide subsidised food to two-thirds of the population. It will provide 5 kilograms of grain at a subsidised rate to about 800 million people every month. The program is expected to cost more than $20 billion a year and is being described as the largest welfare program of its kind anywhere. A judicial panel in the West African state of Guinea is to question the country's Minister for Presidential Security over claims he was involved in a massacre carried out by soldiers in 2009. Colonel Claude Pivi is a key suspect in the killing of at least 150 unarmed civilians at Guinea's main football stadium. Mark Doyle reports.
The massacre at Guinea's main football stadium in 2009 was a seminal event for the country. Soldiers loyal to the military junta in power at the time burst onto the field and opened fire with automatic weapons on the unarmed crowd. At least 150 people were killed and many more beaten up or raped by the military. Human Rights Watch said victims in Guinea were desperate to see justice that would signal an end to long-standing impunity for abuses by members of the security services.
Customs officers in the Kenyan port city of Mombasa have seized almost 1.5 tons of elephant ivory disguised as dry fish exports to be shipped to Malaysia. The Kenyan Wildlife Service said the smugglers hoped the pungent fish would throw sniffer dogs off the scent of the ivory. BBC News.
Welcome back. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Last week, I went into Pegasus Books in Berkeley, and I wandered the aisles and thought what a tremendous sadness I'd feel not to have the opportunity for the sort of inspiration and revelation a local bookstore provides, to read the recommendations and wander from poetry to fiction to new magazines, to stumble on books that I would never look for on my own. Well, despite dire predictions about the dying medium of print, independent bookstores in San Francisco are still surviving. According to the Northern California Independent Booksellers Association, a decade ago, there were around 36 independent bookstores and 5 major chain bookstores in San Francisco. Today, there are 33 indie bookstores and the big chains have closed down. City Lights just celebrated its 60th anniversary. But not all bookstores are thriving. When Adobe Books saw their rent nearly double for their location on 16th Street, they were forced to close. They plan to reopen on 24th, but they have no specific date or location yet. Modern Times bookstore is in debt and may have to close in September. Marcus Books in the Fillmore is also facing eviction. The store says that it is the oldest black-owned bookstore in the nation, and the surrounding community has banded together to save the historic bookstore. A neighborhood health agency is offering to buy the building as a way to keep Marcus Books in business. So the bookstore is still there despite getting an eviction notice in June, and the Oakland store plans to remain open. But it's not all bad news for books. Many independent bookstores are succeeding thanks to continued community support, embracing ebooks, and websites that allow users to order any book, just like Amazon. And while many libraries are cutting services across the country, the San Francisco Public Library is extending hours at 3 branches. They want to ensure that young people will have access to the library for the summer reading program. And some Oakland libraries have summer lunch programs for children, along with literary and other activities. So today we want to celebrate the hope, adventure, and wonder of reading. What are you looking forward to reading this summer? Are there books that altered your cultural perspective that you want to share with us? And what local bookstores and libraries do you support? Well, joining us to talk about all of this today, we have Kristen Evans, who owns Booksmith on Hate and also runs Kepler's Books in Menlo Park. She works to reimagine the role independent bookstores play in their communities and how they can best be sustainable cultural institutions. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Kevin Hunsinger is the co-owner of Green Apple and has been involved in the Bay Area book culture for nearly 25 years. He joined the San Francisco Library's One City, One Book Selection Committee this year. Welcome. Good to have you here. And we've also got Jason Honig, who's a senior librarian in the Collection Development Office at the San Francisco Public Library. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
And by phone, we've got Anthony Propernick, who is a senior library assistant at the 81st Avenue Library in East Oakland. Hi, Anthony.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So I want to get to your recommendations. Everybody has stacks of books in front of us, and I'll give out the number so that you can also call in and give us your book recommendations, and we'll put our summer reading list at yourcallradio.org. But first, let's get a little bit of a sense of the state of the independent bookstore right now, which seems to be a bit of a mixed bag. It's a little bit of good and difficult. And Kristen, Kepler's Books actually closed twice, but it reopened thanks to community protest and support. So what happened?
Yeah, my husband and I bought Booksmith, which is a bookstore in San Francisco on Haight-Ashbury, in 2007. So we had been working on reimagining what an independent bookstore could be. We were seeing with the rise of e-commerce and e-books that independent bookstores were struggling to reinvent themselves, reimagine themselves, and find essentially a sustainable business model, a financial model to keep them afloat. And so we had had some good success at reimagining Booksmith. And as you mentioned, Kepler's had closed in 2005. The community rallied and raised over $1 million for the store to reopen. But at the time, they didn't make too many changes to the way that they were doing business. So they found themselves in jeopardy again in 2012. Clark Kepler, who is the son of Roy Kepler, who's the founder of Kepler's Books, approached Praveen and I about buying certain assets of Kepler's Books. And we said, Clark, we've got to find a way to keep Kepler's open. And it's the largest independent bookstore in Silicon Valley in the peninsula. And it was, you know, obvious that it was such a community outpouring that people really wanted Kepler's to stay alive and well. So we came up with a plan to create a sustainable business model for Kepler's, and it's got two components to it. One is that we made the for-profit bookstore smaller, tighter. We reduced the rent by reducing the square footage of the store, but we didn't reduce the number of titles or the stacks. We actually are just using the space a lot smarter. The second component is that we've actually created a nonprofit called Peninsula Arts and Lectures, or Kepler's Arts and Lectures. And this is an entity that we've been able to raise over $750,000 on a tax-deductible basis to essentially allow the community to support the bookstore. The nonprofit activities include the events programming, classes, writing classes, fundraisers for schools and libraries. Kepler's had always been acting in many ways like a nonprofit, but its legal structure was as a for-profit bookstore. So we essentially figured out a way to ensure that it can continue doing the things that people really came to love about Kepler's Books, but do it in a sustainable way.
Things that make it more of a community center than a business, right?
Exactly.
And so listening to that, how is Green Apple doing, and how are you responding to the changing marketplace and reimagining your role?
Mm-hmm. Well, Green Apple's always enjoyed a wonderful symbiotic relationship with our customers through our used book purchasing.
Yep.
It's a store that's almost created every day by the people who come into the store and support our store. So when you begin there, we have a lot of advantages. We have changed some things, most specifically, I would say, in regards to events. Now we're doing a regular story time Saturday mornings with Ashley, so kids can come in and there's arts and crafts.
So that sounds like a library.
It's a little bit of a library feel. We're doing more local music events. When we do author events in the store, we're really focusing on local authors, people who kind of have their friends and really want to bring in a group themselves. And we've done in-store events with nationally touring authors. You know, you might get 3 or 10 people. It would be a successful event, oddly enough. We really never drew large crowds for national authors, but the right local author will have 35, 40 people in the store, and just find that it's much more gratifying that way. The sales are there, but, you know, they don't necessarily have to be. You know, when you get large members of the community in the store on a regular basis, it's only good.
So I have not yet made the transition to e-books. Other members of my family have done it. I'm going to get there, but I'm still kind of a print person. And one of the things that I absolutely love is just wandering the aisles at a bookstore and seeing what staff recommend and going to look at poetry, which I might not normally be reading. How are you adapting, I guess, your websites or the e-books? How are you dealing with that?
So Kevin and I both have bookstores that are participating in the Indie Commerce program. And Indie Commerce is essentially an e-commerce platform that allows us as independent booksellers to work through the American Booksellers Association. One of the biggest challenges, and, you know, my husband and I both came from business backgrounds and technology backgrounds, it was how frustrating it was to not have the ability to create a easy technology solution, a web solution for customers. I think living in San Francisco, in the Silicon Valley, we know technology. We breathe technology. Many of the people that shop in our stores are accustomed to cutting-edge website technology. So we'll be the first to admit that the Indie Commerce website platform is not as user-friendly as we would love it to be, but it does allow you to have the ability to search for books, download books, and now with the introduction of the Kobo device, you can also purchase a device which is compatible with use of Adobe e-reader
Adobe
editions.
Reader. And what's the site website?
So you just go directly to booksmith.com or keplers.com, and you can see a search box right there. So when you're searching on the title, like you're looking for the new Khalid Hosseini book, you will be given the option to purchase the book from us as a physical book, as well as a e-book.
Got it. Okay, yeah, Kevin, you were going to say.
Well, it's very interesting, the relationship that the American Booksellers Association has forged with Kobo. Now we have devices that we can sell in the store. The Kobo selection of ebooks is comparable to Amazon, with the exception of their original content. So we have basically a level playing field. The prices have been standardized. The selection is comparable. And if a customer buys the e-reader, the Kobo device from Green Apple Books, we will... stay with that customer. That customer stays with us for the duration of their reading on the electronic device, which is a wonderful solution. So, if they go through Green Apple Books to buy the books, it's all funneled through Kobo, and that's the main hub for the e-books. And it really has allowed independent booksellers to take a step back a little bit and know that, Kobo is an independent company, a very successful company internationally. Very few people in the United States have heard of them yet, but they're the industry leader, in Europe and in Canada. So it's a very exciting partnership, and one that I see will benefit both parties and customers for a long time down the line.
And that's Kevin Huntsanger, who's co-owner of Green Apple Books. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Krennan, and we're talking about books. We're going to be compiling a summer reading list here, but we're first taking the pulse of the independent bookstore and the state of our local libraries. We're also joined by Jason Honig, who's a senior librarian in the collection development office at the San Francisco Public Library. We'll hear what's going on there in just a minute. Kristen Evans owns Booksmith on Haight in San Francisco and runs Kepler's Books in Menlo Park. And we're also joined on the line by Anthony Propernick, who is a senior library assistant at the 81st Avenue Library in East Oakland. So let's go to Jason and Anthony and hear a little bit about what's going on at the public libraries and also how you're adapting to the new landscape and serving customers. So the San Francisco Library is in pretty good shape financially, thanks mostly to San Francisco voters and the San Francisco Library
That's
Preservation
right.
Fund. So tell us how that works and how you're doing and what you're doing.
Well, we are very fortunate. We hear about other libraries having terrific problems closing branches and losing staff, and we are very fortunate not to have that situation because of the great support of everyone in the city. And we have the same, or the budget's not 100% finalized yet, but we expect to have at least the same as we had last year. And so if you enjoyed the range of materials, they should be equally available this year. And it includes ebooks as well. We have a new platform, so there's no matter what type of device you have, you can access ebooks through the library's website.
And then you just keep them for 2 weeks and then
they
disappear,
automatically
right?
expire.
Yeah. So you can do ebooks at the libraries now. Let's hear from Anthony Propernick. Hi, Anthony.
Hello.
You guys at the 81st Avenue Library and in libraries all across Oakland are doing interesting things that go outside of the realm of books. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing to serve your neighborhoods besides books?
Absolutely. And as Jason said, we certainly appreciate the support that SFPL gets, and I think we get that same support in Oakland, but we don't have the financial support, I guess, that San Francisco might have. So it's really kind of pushed us into being a little bit more creative about our approach to library services. And what we also have noticed is that we, people are coming into the libraries less and less to read books. In order to get them in, we have to do programming and things that invite them and make it fun and connect them to books in other ways. And so throughout Oakland, we have summer lunch programs and summer reading programs for all ages. The lunch program has been a really great and successful event. We here at 81st serve about 40 to 45 lunches a day during the week.
And it's just to kids, right?
It's, yeah, kids 18 and under. We have lots of youth programs throughout the summer. So we have a mural project. We have a game day upstairs. Our building has an air-conditioned room, so it's hot in East Oakland. So getting kids in here to create time and space for them to hang out. We have ping pong tables and foosball tables and active video games. We do other things like a national night out party out in front of the library. And a lot of it is focused on engagement, community engagement, and development centers. We try to respond to the needs of our communities and access and needs that they have. We do job club programs where we support job seekers in developing resumes and searching for jobs online or applying for jobs online. So,
because computer services are one thing that a lot of people come to the library to access to nowadays.
Absolutely. We, in our branch, we have 24 computers, and they're used all day long. And a lot of that is people, because people don't have access at home in our particular community. Other branches are different, though, because they have less computers because people do have computers in the home and access.
And so different neighborhoods, neighborhood library branches are responding differently to their community needs. Well, let's get to some of your recommendations, and maybe we should start with San Francisco's One City, One Book program, Jason.
This is the first year that San Francisco's One City, One Book program is going to have a young adult novel as the book that everybody in the city is encouraged to read. The program, it goes on in September and October. It's Cory Doctorow's Little Brother. And it's a dystopian view of the world in San Francisco that has just been attacked in a major terrorist attack. And the 17-year-old protagonist gets caught up in it on the wrong side of momentarily and is swept into the adventure. But I'm going to let Kevin say a little more about it since he was on the selection committee.
Sure, that's great. Thank you. It is a very exciting book, especially for now. Cory unabashedly gives us the information that we can use to take back our freedoms. You know, it certainly started in a global catastrophe way. You know, the Bay Bridge went down. San Francisco is under a total police state. And
we're talking about a book here.
Yes, yeah. It isn't War of the Worlds. No, that's a... the protagonist, Winston, in Little Brother being a riff on Big Brother from 1984. So this is the kind of scenario we're in. Surveillance state.
And when you guys chose this, you didn't know about the whole NSA?
I think people knew about the whole NSA thing. But no, it wasn't being talked about so much as it is now. No, it's certainly very timely. And what Cory has done so well with this book is to give everyone, it's almost like a workbook, an action plan of how we can use the technology available to us right now to protect our freedoms and keep them safe. So it's good if you're interested in technology or information technology, you will find it's very authentic, very readable, very interesting. If you're not familiar with this type of thing, if computers are still like, whoa, where do you plug this thing in? you will find a lot to learn. And it's very important information. Plus, it's a gripping story. It's really exciting. It crosses all age groups. If there's been one criticism of this book, it's being marketed. It has been marketed as a young adult novel. It may be a little bit more adult than most young adult books or readers are used to. So it's certainly, the high school level young adult novel, not necessarily the grade kids, but it is for readers of all stripes, and it's going to be a great, great book.
And so what are you trying to do with this One City, One Book?
Well, there's a lot of programming that surrounds the book. Cory will be here in October for a weekend. We're doing tons of events. In fact, I might pass it back to Jason because he's much closer to the programming.
And before we go to Jason, really quickly, you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Crennan. We're talking about books and the literary scene in the Bay Area, both local libraries and independent bookstores. And we're compiling a summer reading list, and that's why we need your help. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255.
5-5-5 and let us know what your top summer reading suggestions are. You can also let us know what are your favorite bookstores, what are the local spots that you recommend. And for our listeners in the Santa Cruz area, we'd love to hear from you. Or how are you reading books these days, in paper, on paper, or as ebooks? And do you purchase ebooks from your local independent bookstores? How do you purchase your ebooks? Do you go to your local libraries? And if you're a library patron, give a shout out to your local branch and let us know what services you think libraries should be offering. Again, the number to call us is 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. We're putting together our summer reading list and we want to know what's on yours. 866-798-8255. And if you are looking for a particular book for yourself or somebody that you know, we have a wealth of information in the room. So give us a call. 866-798-8255. Okay, so tell us more about what's going on, Jason.
Okay, well, the library has many hundreds of programs regarding the One City, One Book. More information can be found on the following site, SFPL, that's San Francisco Public Library, sfpl.org/onecityonebook, all as one word, or twitter.OCOBSF13.
Yeah, don't worry about getting all this information.
Call your local library, find out all about yep. it. That'll be in September and October, but throughout the summer, we're having summer reading programs. And as Anthony mentioned, in Oakland, some of them are food-related as well. They're having free lunch programs at 5 branches this summer for youth ages 18 and under. Call Visitation Valley, Bayview Branch, Excelsior Branch, Chinatown Branch, and Ocean View Branch for more information.
All right, and we'll put all of this information at yourcallradio.org. You can join our conversation and give us your book recommendations by calling 866-798-8255 or email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Anthony, let's hear a couple of your book recommendations. I hear that the staff at the 81st Avenue Library put together a list for us.
Yeah, and I wanted to say real quick, too, that, you know, collaboration has been real key in terms of providing services for patrons. You know, when we don't have the resources or the expertise in getting patrons into libraries or providing programs, we've used other organizations that are doing it to sort of inviting them in to reach out to new populations or new communities for them. And in fact, the 81st Avenue is a joint use facility with two small elementary schools, two public schools. So we're on the school district campus, and we provide a school library as well as a public library. And so we have lots of children's reading recommendations here. And the first one I'm going to mention is One Crazy Summer by Rita Williams Garcia, and it's about a girl who visits Oakland during the summer of 1968 and spends time learning about the Black Panthers. And Rita also has a new follow-up book called PSB 11. And
that was One Crazy Summer by Rita Williams Garcia. I'm looking at the San Francisco Public Library, and they have a kind of a similar book called Virgin Soul by Judy Juanita. That's also about the Black Panther Party in the 1960s in San Francisco, though. Go on, Anthony.
And we also have a local author, Todd Parr. It's T-O-D-D-P-A-R-R, and he has a few books. Reading Makes You Feel Good, The Peace Book, and The Earth Book. And actually, he's coming to visit our library and several other branches, but he's coming here on July 10th. And personally, those are some of the kids' books. And personally, I'm reading, because our summer reading theme is reading is so delicious, I'm reading Alice Waters' cookbook, The Art of Simple Food, which I've pretty much enjoyed every recipe I've explored in that book. And then Cod, the Story of the Fish That Changed the World by Mark Krolansky, which is a great story about the cod industry and how it and the trade and how that influenced development both in relationships between Europe and the United States in the 1800s and fisheries.
Fascinating. And what was the theme of your summer reading again?
Our summer reading theme is reading is so delicious.
I'm hungry.
I wanted to hear him say that again. Reading is so delicious. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We're talking about the literary scene in the Northern California, and we're putting together a book list, a reading list. I'm joined by Kevin Hunsanger, who's co-owner of Green Apple Books, Jason Honig, who's a senior librarian in the Collection Development Office at the San Francisco Public Library, Anthony Propernick, who you just heard from, who's a senior library assistant at the 81st Avenue Library in East Oakland, and their Reading is So Delicious is the summer theme, and Kristen Evans, who owns Booksmith on Haight in San Francisco and also runs Kepler's Books in Menlo Park. You can join us by calling 866-798-8255. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
Give us a call and join in today's conversation. In many ways, you can call 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK, or send an email, comment, or question to yourcallradio.org.
Welcome back. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. That's also where you can listen to past shows, send us show ideas, and find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we're going to rebroadcast Rose's interview with Michael Hastings, who's the author of The Operators, The Wild and Terrifying Inside Story of America's War in Afghanistan. Hastings died in a car crash in June. Friday is our weekly media roundtable. We'll analyze coverage of the week news. And also the movie Fruitvale is opening on July 12th, and we're asking Your Call listeners to go and see it and join a conversation we're going to have about it on July 17th. And we want to hear from you. What are you reading this summer? We're putting together a summer reading list. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255 or send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. We want to hear your top summer reading suggestions, and we also want to know if you go to your local library, your local independent bookstore. How are you purchasing e-books, if that's how you're reading? 866-798-8255. We're joined by Kristen Evans, who owns Booksmith on Haight in San Francisco and runs Kepler's Books in Menlo Park. Kevin Hunsanger, who's co-owner of Green Apple Books. Jason Honig, who's a senior librarian in the Collection Development Office at the San Francisco Public Library. And Anthony Propernick, who's senior library assistant at the 81st Avenue Library in East Oakland. And so be a little patient. Callers are going to get to you in just a second. Let me hear a couple of book suggestions from, go ahead. Let's start with you.
Okay.
We're starting
you
with
being
Kevin.
Sorry.
Hi.
No, that's just fine. So, you know, one of the things that I love, and I think most readers love about reading, is that it's non-passive. You know, there's actually a relationship between the reader and the book itself. And the title I'm going to talk about now by pseudonymous Bosch, called Write This Book, is a very active participation between the reader who becomes the writer of this book. It's a young adult story. This is the fourth or fifth book that pseudonymous Bosch has written. That is his author name. In this story, apparently the author, who goes by the name of I Am Anonymous, I think it's thinly veiled reference to pseudonymous Bosch, has gone missing, and so the reader has to write the story. And it basically is a writing guide for kids, but in a very, very active way. So it discusses things about plot and character development, and you know, you can open up any, you know, random writing tip. When in doubt, insert a joke. an F joke, actually. I can't say that in the...
Yeah, please. FCC regulations here.
Yes, not the the big F word, but yeah, no, and it discusses different genres: Western, science fiction, romance, graphic novels, at least comic books, you know, literary, any book your language arts teacher wants you to read. Coming of age, not sure what this means, it never happened to me. You know, it's just chock full of weird humor, and again, very interactive, very fun, lots of whimsical illustrations, a perfect book for kids who really want to take part in their reading.
And it's called Write This Book, and that's Kevin Hunsanger, who's owner of Green Apple Books. We'll get more recommendations in just a minute. Let's get one from Kristen.
Yeah, I thought I'd bring a couple of the bestsellers with me. This month, the new Neil Gaiman, The Ocean at the End of the Lane, has just come out, as well as Khaled Hosseini's And the Mountains Echoed. That follows up on The Kite Runner and Thousand Splendid Suns, has gotten wonderful reviews. Our staff members think it's his best book yet. But the book that I brought to talk about actually came out last year, but it's new in paperback. It's called Wild. It's by Cheryl Strayed. It's a wonderful personal memoir about her attempt to hike the Pacific Crest Trail as a young woman. It is humorous because she is woefully unprepared to take on this major trek across this landscape, which has, is a bear of a trek to make from the dry desert through the rocky ice slush. And she tells a story that is a personal journey, but it also just is done with lots of humor. It is the perfect summer read.
That's Wild, and we'll put all of these recommendations at yourcallradio.org along with links to everybody's website and more resources. And let's hear from Jason on a recommendation, and then we'll get to our callers.
Okay, and I just wanted to say the San Francisco Public Library's summer reading program is going on now through August 11th, and read books, get prizes, which are books, and local attraction tickets. And this theme is San Francisco. So one of our local authors, Andrew Sean Greer, has just come out with a new book, The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells, which I see.
I brought it
Kristen
too.
Brought.
Okay. I love Andrew. He shops in the store.
Oh, wow.
The Impossible Lives of Greta
Wells.
Greta Wells.
And so you might know Andrew wrote Confessions of Max Tivoli, and in this book he revisits time travel.
Right. In this case, Greta Wells, her brother dies of an AIDS-related disease in 1985, and she is so distraught, she ends up having electroshock therapy and ends up waking up in different periods of time in 1918 and 1941 and back and forth. It sounds fascinating.
It's really interesting because he has taken this character and put her and also the people that surround her in these different time periods. So it examines what has been the changing social mores over that period of time for a gay man, her brother. So obviously in 1985, he's died of AIDS, but in 1918, he's a closeted gay man. And, you know, it actually is a heart-wrenching book, but it also has a lot of humor in it as well.
And it's about how love is really all you can depend on with the world being so problematic.
And on that inspiring note, let's go to some of our callers. We're compiling our summer reading list here on Your Call. The number to join us is 866-798-8255. Give us your summer reading recommendation and let us know how you're reading these days. 866-798-8255 is the toll-free number. And also let us know what local literary institutions are you patronizing, be it library, independent bookstores, etc. Where are you getting your reading material? 866-798-8255. And let's go to Peter. Hi, Peter.
Yes, hi. It's Peter Warfield from Library Users Association.
Great.
You've got some wonderful people and wonderful institutions on. I'm really glad to hear all of them. And, of course, we love books and libraries. There are some library books, actually, related books about the history of San Francisco Public Library that I think would be very interesting for folks. One is Patience and Fortitude by Nicholas Basbanes, Basbanes. And there's a bit about the library in Rebecca Solnit, a local author, Hollow City, The Siege of San Francisco and the Crisis of American Urbanism. So those are, you've actually made me think, gee, we ought to compile a reading list of the materials that are particularly interesting.
That are about San Francisco?
About San Francisco and particularly about the library. I did want to point out that...
Peter, just one second. Yeah. If you do compile that, we'd love it if you did. Will you send us a link and we'll post it at yourcallradio.org? Now go on with your comment. I'm sorry to interrupt.
So what I wanted to say was that San Francisco indeed is very, very well funded. It's the second best funded library of all 87 libraries that the Public Library Association has in a statistical book.
What's the first?
The first is Hamilton Public Library, Ontario. And they have 15% more money per capita spend than San Francisco. But San Francisco at $100 per person is head and shoulders above the third highest one, which is Seattle. And three-quarters of the libraries in the country serving 500,000 or more people. Out of 87 people, we are number two. The next one is 20% less funded than we are. And when you get one quarter of the way down the list, all the libraries, three quarters of the libraries are subsisting on spending literally $50 or less per person than we do. So we're tremendously well funded thanks to Prop E in 1994 and then
2007.
Prop E in 2007.
Yeah.
And San Francisco Library, while it's wonderful to go to a library, and I always say the best search engine is a librarian, the funding, for example, we are having an $8.5 million increase in budget for the next fiscal year, and the library has frozen its book budget and also some other print materials like teen and kids magazines and so on. There is an increase in so-called e-resources, so that the books and materials combined come out as an increase, but they're not comparable to the overall increase in the budget, and again, the book budget is absolutely frozen, and we think that's very, very bad.
So, Peter, let me get some comment from our panelists, and I want to get to more callers as well. Thank you so much for calling, and I hope that you do put together that San Francisco book list.
Can I say one more thing about hours?
If you could do it quickly, please.
The library came up with a mandated study of hours, and unfortunately, along with some of the increases came a massive cut of evening hours from 8 to 9 citywide. We managed to make enough of a ruckus to have most of those restored. But while there are increases in hours, there are cuts to evenings still going on, and we're working and looking for support as well to prevent those cuts from happening.
Well, thank you so much for calling, and you're okay, Jason does not want to respond to this. I did want to bring up a question that Peter brought up, which is that it seems like we're really in a fortunate area in Northern California with regard to books. So is this region atypical in terms of how independent bookstores are doing?
Yes. Historically, San Francisco has had a higher per capita of bookstores. There are communities in the Bay Area, though, like Fremont and San Jose, that lack strong independent bookstore because the chains had essentially gone in and wiped them out. In San Francisco, we were very fortunate to have, you know, a robust support of independents so that we weathered, you know, the large corporations coming in and then leaving. You know, what's been proven by the box store model is just not a sustainable model. Especially in the internet era, what independents offer is something more than just a place to buy a book. There are places of community where people come together to have conversations. Booksmith, when we took it over in 2007, was doing about 60 to 70 events per year, and now we do over 200 events a year. And many of those events are not just traditional author on book tour type events. We do a fun event called Book Swap, where people have a little bit of wine and bring a book, and then they swap it. We have Wordplay, which is like a wait, don't tell me kind of game show, where people come and compete in a variety of word games. We have a new event that we just launched last month to a huge audience called Shipwreck, which was erotic fan fiction. So we had six contestants write their version of The Great Gatsby, read by a Shakespearean actor It was amusing. We had a great time.
That sounds really fun. Let's go to more of our callers. Before we go to Gina in Sonoma, Martha in Oakland called with a comment. She wanted to give a shout out to the Golden Gate Library, which has a great selection, great staff, and a wonderful children's librarian. That's the Golden Gate Library shout out. And let's go to Gina in Sonoma. Hi, Gina. Thanks. Welcome to your call.
Hi, I guess this is Christina, but I think that you've got me on the air, and I am really enjoying your show. Thank you. I was thinking you were asking for things that have culturally affected me in reading, and a few years back I really wanted to explore Islam and the Middle East with our involvement in the wars there, and was very pleased to come across Tamim Ansari at the San Francisco Library in a panel discussion. And thank you, Krista, for turning me on to his latest. I was really
He's also local, right?
Tamim Ansari?
Yeah,
he is. Yeah, we host him for a number of events a year. He's written three or four books. I think I mentioned earlier Khalid Hosseini, though.
Oh, okay. Who's also local.
And also writing about Afghanistan. Novels.
So go on, Gina. Sorry, I mean, Christina.
Yes. I'm excited to read his latest. I was going to recommend an earlier book by him called West of Kabul, East of New York. I found it just a gripping, exciting read and very visceral. So that, and also reading Queen Noor's memoirs. And for your readers who may want to get a better feeling for Islam and politics in the Middle East, those are two I would recommend.
Thank you so much for those recommendations, Christina. And if our listeners want to call in with their recommendations for our summer reading list, give us a call at 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can directly just post your recommendation at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. We are also asking if there's a book that's had a particular impact on you to let us know about it. And where do you purchase your books, or do you go to your local library? Let us know how you are getting your literary recommendations and readings these days. 866-798-8255. And just piggybacking before we go to David, we'll get to you in just a second, David, but piggybacking on what Christina was talking about, do you have any good recommendations for sort of literary works that dive into recent cultural and political themes? Maybe something on Mandela or what's happening in Egypt or Brazil or anything?
Mm-hmm. Well, when she was talking, it reminded me of a memoir that came out several years ago about Iran, Lipstick Jihad, a young Bay Area journalist, Iranian-American, part of the diaspora here, went back to Iran to cover that region for Time magazine. And she wrote a wonderful memoir about that journey, including secret meetups of young people watching Friends episodes, you know, delayed Friends episodes. It was a terrific book called Lipstick Jihad.
Lipstick Jihad goes on to our summer reading list. And let's go to David at Donner Summit. Hi, David. Welcome to your call. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I would like to second the Cheryl Strayed Wild, and I would also recommend Tiny Beautiful Things by the same author. And I live in the Santa Cruz area, and I would like to give a shout-out to Bookshop Santa Cruz, the independent bookshop there. It's a wonderful bookshop, and I read my books from paper.
You're still doing the paper thing. Are you thinking about making the switch to e-books?
No.
Not at all?
Not at this point.
And what is it that you like about your local bookstore? Is there anything? Have they begun doing more events? What is it that really draws you?
They do events all the time. They're very friendly. They're very knowledgeable staff. It's a very comfortable atmosphere. I've been going there for years, and I will continue to go there.
Well, thank you so much for letting us know about your recommendation, David. We'll add it to our summer reading list, and all of that will be at yourcallradio.org. Let's go to Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to your call.
Hi. I wanted to say two things. One is that I'm in the East Bay, and I like Pegasus Bookstore, but Green Apple Bookstore is just wonderful. The people there are so nice. I sell books to them all the time, and they just couldn't be more pleasant. And whenever I need a book, they're extremely helpful.
That's wonderful. And we've got Kevin right here,
beaming.
And he's wearing green and he's beaming. Yes.
Ear to ear.
The book that I wanted to recommend is there's a wonderful author named Sharon K. Penman, and she writes historical novels about England in the early days, the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th century. And she's been badly overshadowed by Philippa Gregory, who is a much inferior writer. And her newest book is called Lionheart, which is about King Richard II, King Richard the Lionheart. And she is, not only is she a wonderful author, but she's a really nice person. I sent her an email, and she wrote me back immediately, and I've been to book readings of hers, and I wish more people in the Bay Area knew about her.
Sharon K. Penman is the author.
Yeah.
Hold on for 1 second, Nancy. We'll put that onto our book recommendation list. There's another local author, Patricia Bracewell, who wrote a book called Shadow on the Crown. It's going to be a trilogy, and it's also about that same historical period in the area around England and Denmark. So there's another one to put on that list. Go on, Nancy.
No, I was just going to say that I wish more people in this area knew about her. It's actually quite difficult to find her books because most of the bookstores don't carry her books, and I don't know why, but, you know, maybe I guess it's kind of a double edge. You know, if more people knew about her, more people would read the books, but if more bookstores had her books, maybe more people would read her.
Well, thank you for letting us all know about her, Nancy. And if we have just a couple of minutes left in the show, and I want to get to much more of the recommendations from our panelists here, but you can give us a call at 866-798-8255 if you'd like to add to our summer reading list. 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. All of these recommendations and resources will be at yourcallradio.org. You can also post book recommendations directly there. Let's go to Rich in Belmond. I don't know where. Ben Lomond.
Yes, Ben Lomond, you're right. Yes, good morning. I'd like to recommend a book called Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin. The book goes into detail about how and why everybody seems to be in debt nowadays. And for example, one of your panel people was talking about how their library is being closed. It has to do with debt, and to me, that's a topic that's most people seem to be in debt, including the government. So that's why I recommend Creature from a Jekyll Island.
Creature from?
From Jekyll Island.
From Jekyll Island.
J-E-K-Y-L-L. It's down in Georgia, off the coast of Georgia. But it mostly goes into the money system and how people have gotten into debt.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for that recommendation. Go ahead, Kristen.
Speaking of kind of the current state of the economy, there's the best-selling book for us in both business and technology is Who Owns the Future by Jaron Lanier. Jaron lives in Berkeley and has written such an interesting and important book about how the internet is disrupting traditional economies. And what we have in this book is a fun read because he imagines all the creative possibilities of the future. He's a futurist, but he actually explores why it is that the middle class continues to erode. And he attributes it to the lack of compensation for artists like musicians and writers. But then he takes this 10, 20, 30 years forward and says, look, no one else is going to be immune for this. Once we have automated cars, we won't have drivers. Once we have improved medicine with the use of technology, even doctors will be impacted. So he talks at great length about how the technology is impacting how we are living and the way that we make our livelihood. And he posits some solutions on how we might reimagine technology to enable and empower and enrich the lives of its users.
And that's Who Owns the Future by Jaron Lanier. He's also a local author from Berkeley. I read that book. It was very thought-provoking. Let's get a couple. So let me just tell you who's on with us. Kristen Evans owns Booksmith on Hate and runs Kepler's in Menlo Park. Kevin Hunsanger is co-owner of Green Apple Books in San Francisco. Jason Honig is a senior librarian at the San Francisco Public Library. Let's get a couple of recommendations from you, Jason, and you, Kevin.
Okay. Another local author, we mentioned Andrew Sean Greer's book. Amy Tan is coming out with a new book in November that's very much looked forward to.
Yeah, it's been a long time, it feels like.
Yeah, Valley of Amazement. The Valley of Amazement. And it, she was looking at a photograph of her grandmother in a beautiful traditional Chinese outfit, and she was shocked to discover when looking through a book of photographs of courtesans that that was considered a courtesan outfit. And she says she hopes, you know, she's not jumping to conclusions that if somebody were to see her in one of her rock and roll outfits in her band that she's in.
Rock Bottom
that,
Remains.
Right, that they don't think she is always dressed as a dominatrix. But she doesn't know for sure, but it inspired her to think about what life was like.
And maybe future generations will write a book about Amy Tan.
Right.
Reimagine her life.
But this is goes from the world of courtesans in Shanghai to 19th century San Francisco, and it a mother-daughter relationship.
So we are just all on local authors here. This is fantastic. Okay, yeah. Kevin, are you going to keep us on the same theme?
How could I not when Rebecca Solnit has a new book? The Faraway Nearby. As soon as one of the earlier callers mentioned Rebecca's name, I think all eyes lit up.
Yeah,
in the
we
booth.
Love her.
We love her. And that's about all I really need to say about this book. If you're familiar with her, you will read it. You will love it. If you're not familiar with her, it's a great place to dive in. She is really one of San Francisco's great treasures, as were the Cacophony Society. The next book I want to dive into, Tales of the San Francisco Cacophony Society. This is a coffee table book, so maybe not one to bring to the beach, but it should inspire everyone to go out and make some events of their own.
Be crazy.
Be crazy, be creative, get into your world, bring people with you, dress up, and have a blast. So the Cacophony Society was a really important part of San Francisco's history. If you're not familiar with them, this will be a great introduction to them. It basically built up to flash mobs, Burning Man, art cars, doggy diner heads. The list goes on and on.
All right, so let me get David in San Francisco on. David, we're running out of time, so if you could be very quick and give us your recommendation.
Yes, my recommendation is How the French Invented Love by Marilyn Yalom. She's at Stanford, lives in Palo Alto.
All right, you're staying on theme with the local author. Thank you so much for that, David. All of these books will be at yourcallradio.org. Okay, we have about enough time for each of you to give us one more recommendation. Jason, you start.
Coming up in November, too, is an interesting book called Furious Cool, Richard Pryor and the World That Made Him. And Cornel West has described Richard Pryor as the most free black man of the 20th century.
Huh.
And this should be a fascinating biography.
Let me go to Kristen just because we're running out of time.
There was a book that came out by Chronicle about the Golden Gate Bridge celebrating its anniversary last year. This year, there is a new edition from Chronicle called The Bay Bridge. It is a beautiful gift book. It has information about the history of the Bay Bridge, but also a lot of information about the construction of the new span. It has information about the wildlife that lives around the bridge. It's got a lot of wonderful little stories in it. It's called Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon.
Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon. And Kevin, you get to be our last.
All right, bring us home. Matt Bell's In the House Upon the Dirt Between the Lake and the Woods is the darkest, weirdest, most surreal kind of love story, relationship story, family you will ever read.
And that's Kevin Hunsanger. He's co-owner of Green Apple Books. We've also been joined by Kristen Evans, who owns Booksmith on Hate in San Francisco and Kepler's in Menlo Park. Jason Honig is a senior librarian at the San Francisco Public Library. We were also joined by Anthony Propernick from the 81st Avenue Library in East Oakland. Our entire list will be at yourcallradio.org. You can continue to post recommendations there. And thank you all for joining us. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll rebroadcast a conversation Rose had with Rolling Stone writer Michael Hastings, who recently died in a car crash in Los Angeles. In his book, The Operator, The Wild and Terrifying Inside Story of America's War in Afghanistan, he wrote about the military's top decision makers, their mistrust of President Obama, and the close relationship between the military and journalists. It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.